Good morning, and welcome to this news conference hosted by the Coalition to Prevent Chemical Disasters. We're here to discuss President Obama's recent executive order calling for better protections to prevent chemical disasters. For more about this and the rest of the important information that you'll hear on this call, please check us out on www.preventchemicaldisasters.org. I'm Catherine McFate, the President of the Center for Effective Government, and I'll moderate today. In the wake of the West Texas fertilizer explosion in the spring and a number of train derailments that involved toxic chemicals and other incidents that have exposed communities and workers to toxic substances, President Obama issued an executive order on October 1st titled Improving Chemical Facility Safety and Security. Now, this order requires three federal agencies, EPA, OSHA, and the Department of Homeland Security, to better coordinate their activities and to propose new policies that will significantly enhance the safety and security of facilities that store and manufacture chemicals. Under the executive orders, these agencies have until October 31st to identify new policy options and until May 1st of 2014 to report their recommendations to the President. Now, between October and May, the three agencies are supposed to engage with chemical facility workers, with first responders, with local officials, and with residents of the communities that live near these chemical facilities. Already, as not surprising, already these activities are being delayed because of the shutdown of the federal government. One stakeholder meeting that was supposed to be held in Washington, D.C. on October 1st was canceled, and there was supposed to be a regional meeting on a pilot project that's going on in the New Jersey area that was also canceled. There are supposed to be at least three additional meetings that were being planned, but they're now on hold because of the shutdown. So that's unfortunate, but we're hoping that they'll get back on track, that this won't last too long, they'll get back on track. What we're here today to do is to release poll results that the Coalition to Prevent Chemical Disasters commissioned from Lake Research Partners. We wanted to find out what Americans think about policies that could better protect them from dangerous chemicals. So we polled 744 likely voters, and we found that a majority want stronger protections to reduce the threats of chemical disasters. I'll just go over a few highlights of the poll. You can find more details, again, on our website, www.preventchemicaldisasters.org. So here's what we found. A majority of likely voters believe that, quote, the federal government should require chemical facilities to use safer chemicals and processes, end quote, when they're effective, available, and affordable. We also found that support, this is not surprising, support for more federal requirements increases when voters have more information. So when they heard that over 100 million Americans live in high-risk zones around chemical plants, support for more federal requirements grew. And that they also, when voters heard that hundreds of plants have already switched to safer chemical alternatives, support for new federal requirements increased to about two-thirds. Now, we wanted to be fair, so we did test our message about shifting to safer chemical alternatives against anti-regulatory messages that often get put out by businesses, and even when put side by side with these messages about too much regulation, problems for businesses, unnecessary, 59% of likely voters continued to support having the federal government require chemical facilities to switch to safer processes. Now, on this call, you're going to hear from four people. Juan Perez, an individual from Texas who lives in a community in the Houston area that's near high-risk chemical facilities. John Berkner, who works at a wastewater treatment plant that has switched to safer alternatives. He's also a mayor of the nearby community near that plant. Major General Randy Manner, recently retired from the United States Army, who was previously involved in helping to detect and secure chemical weapons around the world and in assessing the security risks of critical chemical facilities and assisting with consequent management after chemical incidents. But first, I am thrilled and honored to introduce former New Jersey Governor and former Environmental Protection Agency Administrator under George W. Bush, Christine Todd Whitman. Welcome, Governor Whitman.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Catherine. That, Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just, I'm delighted to be on this call because of the importance of this issue. It's something that has we've been working on since 9/11, reducing the vulnerability to terrorist attacks on facilities where hazardous chemicals are stored is long overdue. Many companies have acted responsibly to reduce their vulnerability, but far too many others have not, and that's where the problem is and why we need to have some action at the federal level. As you mentioned, there are more than 100 million people potentially at risk, and of course in my state, New Jersey, we're the most densely populated state in the nation. Those numbers are very relevant to us. So the need for action is obvious. We see it time and again when you have accidental releases, such as that catastrophe in West Texas. That was almost 6 months ago. It reminds us of just how devastating a deliberate release could be. That wasn't deliberate, but we know what could happen. And every time there is a tanker truck that overturns on a highway and an entire community has to be evacuated because there are chemicals in that tanker, we have an understanding of just how important this issue is. The poll results being released today demonstrate that it's not a partisan issue. It is a matter of prudent public policy. The overwhelming support expressed by likely voters across all the demographics, party lines, gender, that shows that people who get, once they get familiar with the issue, they support federal action to make these facilities safer. Opposition to the measures was in single digits, and this is something clearly that most people support, and they understand that we need to take these actions. Requiring the use of safer chemicals and processes when they're available, effective, and affordable is just common sense. And I want to emphasize that. It's not talking about forcing them to change whole processes when there is nothing that they can do to supplant the chemicals that they're using. That's what we're calling for, but we've seen companies over and over again show that they can do this, that they can find more effective, affordable chemicals that are available to them. Both the president and the vice president held that position when they were in the Senate, and they campaigned promising to get it done, yet we're now 5 years later and the problem remains. I was very encouraged by the executive order of the president that he issued this past spring. It was a good first step, but it's only a first step. The administration's self-imposed deadline for presenting options for improving the safety and reducing the vulnerability of these facilities is October 31st. I expect that requiring the use of safer chemicals and processes when they're available, effective, and affordable will be among the recommendations that we see. But I hope that this partial government shutdown doesn't push back that October 31st deadline. Moving this process forward without further delay is essential by any definition of the word. EPA has the authority it needs to make it happen, and I hope it starts to do so as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Governor Whitman. And I need to correct something. I apparently said that the executive order was issued on October 1. It was issued on August 1st, so there is some time. Next, we have Major General Randy Manner, who transitioned from the United States Army this past December. He served in the Middle East as the deputy commander of the 3rd U.S. Army during Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, and as the acting and deputy director of the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. General Manner, can you share your perspective on the risks of chemical facilities with regard to our national security?
Good morning, and I want to thank each of you for participating in this call today. For the past 35 years as a citizen soldier of the United States Army and also of the Army National Guard, I had the honor and the privilege of helping protect the people of the United States, both overseas and also here at home. The safety and security of our citizens has been really the number one priority, whether the threat was from those who would do us harm or as a result of the devastation and suffering caused by natural disasters, such as earthquakes or hurricanes. However, for decades, our country has failed to fix a security problem here at home, one that puts millions of our citizens at risk, even though the problem has common sense solutions. The problem is the vulnerability of our industrial chemical facilities to a terrorist attack or to a catastrophic accident. In my opinion, the best method to reduce the chances that terrorists will target specific chemical facilities is to make them less appealing. In other words, to minimize the catastrophic but sensational headlining consequences by replacing hazardous chemicals with safer alternatives and minimizing the amounts of hazardous materials that are used and stored. Having worked in senior posts in the Pentagon, the Middle East, the National Guard, and the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, I know well the challenges of defending our homeland and the immense human suffering, business losses, and environmental harm that can result from a chemical incident. Right after local firefighters and police respond to chemical incidents, the National Guard is usually called in to assist, especially in those towns and cities that do not have people with the proper equipment and training to help those first responders. So the bottom line is chemical plant security is not only a safety and environmental concern, it is one that affects our nation's security here at home. Catherine, back to you.
Okay, our next speaker is John Berkner. He's the president of Utilities Workers Union of America Local 534 and works at a wastewater treatment plant in New Jersey. John, tell us why your plant is safer than it was several years ago and how that impacts both your workplace and the community that you represent as the mayor.
Well, thank you, and good morning, everyone. It's my honor to be on this call. Governor Whitman, thank you very much for your participation and support. I represent the labor force at the Bergen County Utilities Authority, which is the third largest water pollution control facility in New Jersey. We treat, on average, between 70 and 90 million gallons per day of sanitary and industrial wastewater that is sourced from 46 municipalities throughout northern New Jersey. The treated wastewater is then discharged directly into the Hackensack River, which, as we all know, is a very important tidal estuary which flows through the New Jersey Meadowlands and eventually into the Newark Bay. Now, for decades, the BCUA utilized highly toxic and very, very dangerous chlorine gas as the final step in our treatment process to disinfect the treated wastewater prior to the discharge into the river. Our average inventory was about 30 to 40 tons of chlorine gas stored under pressure, and I don't think that I can really overstate the hazards attributable to chlorine gas and the potential for leaks and the serious safety threat that that would pose to both the workers and the public at large should a large enough plume be released due to an accident. And since our facility is situated in the most densely populated county and in the most densely populated state, not to mention the proximity to the fragile environmental ecosystem of the Hackensack River Basin, the move to an inherently safer technology for the treatment and disinfection of our wastewater was really essential. It became very essential. So in 1999, we made the transition to a much safer sodium hypochlorite solution, a 12 to 15% solution of sodium hypochlorite, which you might recognize more or less as essentially a dilute bleach solution to disinfect our wastewater. We followed that up with a sodium bisulfite solution to dechlorinate the wastewater, therefore making the discharge to the river safer to the aquatic life while eliminating the threat of the catastrophic release of chlorine gas by completely eliminating the utilization of hazardous chlorine gas at our facility. As the mayor of nearby Westwood, the move to the inherently safer treatment technology means that the residents throughout Bergen County and certainly potentially a larger population will not be exposed to the release of a toxic gas as a result of an industrial accident at either our facility or perhaps even during the transport of the materials on our roadways. So there are many success stories just like ours throughout the state of New Jersey. However, there still does remain a lot to do. And as detailed in the recently released report by the New Jersey Work Environment Council, there are about 90 New Jersey facilities still using large quantities of hazardous chemicals. They pose a serious catastrophic safety and health risk if a worst-case release should occur. So with that, I'll just close again by saying thank you and appreciate the opportunity to participate in this call.
Thank you, John. And last but certainly not least, we have Juan Perez from Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services, also known as TEJAS. Juan, you've been you're in the Houston area, and there have been a lot of explosions around the chemical and oil plants in that region. What protections actually exist for residents in that area, and how important is chemical safety for the security of the folks that you live and work with inside those in that area? Juan?
Yeah, I'm back. I was trying to unmute the phone.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. I mentioned earlier that my phone was stolen 2 days ago, and so I'm on a borrowed phone that I don't know how to use. Anyway, my name is Juan Parras. I live in Houston, Texas, and I'm honored to hear Governor Whitman speak about the issue that it's actually been an issue that concerns them and all of us since right after 9/11. I specifically want to bring up the fact that right after 9/11, almost 6 months after that, we had a speaker from the Attorney General's Office of the Southern District of Texas come to Texas Southern University and speak about what was in the planning stage after immediately after 9/11. And a comment that he made while he was speaking to the university students was that after 9/11, they sent out a huge questionnaire to all the major cities in the nation asking them, please identify all the resources that are potential targets, and, you know, and in the meantime, here's what we're looking at. And they had a list of potential targets for terrorist attacks. And he mentioned the fact that Houston is the only one that checked everything on that list. And, of course, during that time, it was so critical, the information that they were collecting, that he didn't mention what it was. But it scared the daylights out of me. Living in Houston, where I know that we have 405 chemical plants on a 16-mile stretch of land, and anything that can happen at any one of those facilities could actually have a domino effect. So the seriousness of chemical safety and chemical security, it's not something that is imaginable or, you know, not real. It's real, and it's very real to communities, especially that border the Houston Ship Channel, where we have a huge number of minority communities, and also it's an area that is actually known for EJ hotspots. And EJ hotspots are, you know, considered one of the priorities for the EPA when it comes to environmental hazards and environmental contamination and exposure and whatnot. So I am glad and looking forward to this executive order actually having some teeth in it, to where it will actually force the industry to either change to alternative chemicals, use safer products in the processing and transport and the transportation of. In the Houston area, again, I would like to reemphasize that we have a huge infrastructure of the industry. The headquarters to most of the industry actually have huge rental spaces in Houston. So we have a double challenge here in the Houston area, in that the city actually is very pro-industry, the state is very pro-industry, and they're looking the other way instead of looking at safety and regulation issues that can make it safe not only for their workers at the plant, but also for the communities that are adjacent to the chemical plants. And with that, I will say that I'll be open to questions if there are any questions, and I am certainly very happy to be included in this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan. And thank you, Mayor Berkner and General Manner and Governor Whitman. So we're going to stop now and open up the conference call to questions and answers. Again, let me remind you that you can find all this information on www.preventchemicaldisasters.org. Please state your name and your media affiliation when you ask your question. So now we're open.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question or if you have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. This will place the question in the order it was received. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. Okay, we will go to our first question. Our first question comes from Kate Shepherd with the Huffington Post. Kate, please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks for having the call today. I wanted to ask about a sort of related question. Yesterday we reported that the DHS's chemical facility anti-terrorism standards, which have been extended a few times since 2007, have lapsed because of the shutdown. The previous ones expired on October 4th. I wonder if you could speak to how much of a concern that is, and maybe even just a little bit more about concerns about the shutdown's effect on the other rulemaking around chemical facilities that's happening right now.
Do you want anybody in particular to take that?
I mean, Governor Whitman would be great, but I'm sure everybody else has things to say as well.
You know, Catherine said that at the beginning, and I would just reiterate, this is Governor Whitman. You know, this is something that has been an obvious issue, particularly at the forefront, since 9/11. That was in 2001. It's time to take action, and the fear is, of course, that we've seen some meetings already being put off because of the shutdown. This is one of those areas where it should bring home to people the importance of Congress doing its business and getting us back on track, because it really, we can't afford to have this lapse and continue any longer. We really need to start to take action, because it's one of those obvious vulnerabilities that attracts the attention of people who want to make problems for our country.
If anybody else has any thoughts on the shutdown part, would be great too.
Just to say that we're hopeful that it will be have federal employees back at work within a week or two, and that we can get this back on track, because it's critically important that the business of government move forward.
All right, we will move on to our next question. Our next question comes from Christopher Cole with Inside Washington. Chris, please proceed with your question.
Hello? Oh. Hi, thanks for the call. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thanks. I was wondering, Dr. David Michaels, the head of OSHA, recently indicated that EPA and DHS and OSHA were working together to begin sharing data under the executive order. I was wondering, in your experience, how much of that data sharing has occurred in recent years between EPA and OSHA, and could that be helpful in terms of leveraging some of OSHA's process safety management expertise in terms of helping prevent or mitigate some of these events? Could you speak to that, please?
That's got to be answered by someone who's been more involved with what's been going on and within the administration than I have. I've been out of EPA too long to be able to answer it. Well, it's safe to say that any time you can, if you have real sharing of data, it's can only going to help. But I leave it to others who have been involved with the agency or watching the closer to the administration than I've been.
This is General Manner. I can't address that issue specifically, but a related one is that since 9/11, there has been an exponential increase in the exchange of information between DHS and DOD, and also with state and local agencies. So that's something that has increased significantly, and so we can say things, at least we know what the dangers are now, whereas prior to 9/11, we really didn't have our arms around it as tightly as we do now. To say nothing about doing consequence management in case something really bad does happen.
This is Catherine McKinney. But part of the problem here is that we've got these three different agencies that are looking at different chemicals, and there's just holes in the coverage. And that's part of what we hope that this executive order will help mitigate, that we'll actually have all the toxic chemicals that should be reviewed and reported on covered in among these three agencies, instead of having these huge gaps where no one sort of takes responsibility for overseeing and monitoring particular chemicals.
This is Juan, and a comment that I would like to add to what the topic is that recently there was an article here in Texas finding the West Texas fertilizer plant $118,000 for 24 violations that they had. And you know, this is an incident that killed 15 people, and the penalty that they are being fined is just ridiculous. And that's one of the other aspects that we are actually trying to push, to that there be a change in the penalties that are given to companies that actually end up killing folks, and then they're only fined, like in this case, the West Texas facility was only fined $118,300, which is shameful.
And wasn't the last time, if I'm correct, I don't have the figures in front of me, but I think the last time that facility had been inspected was in the 80s?
1986.
Yes. And part of this is a problem with the resources that are available to OSHA, and that they don't have enough inspectors. The population's increased. The number of facilities that they're meant to oversee has doubled since OSHA was established, and the number of inspectors has not in any way, shape, or form kept pace. So there's just no way that with the resources they have, OSHA can monitor the health and safety of the workplaces that they should be examining around the country.
All right. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now move on to our next question. Our next question comes from David Tarrant with the Dallas Morning News. David, please proceed with your question.
Hi. Hi. Yes, this question is for Governor Whitman. How does she think chemical safety might be different if EPA had been empowered the way she wanted after September 11th?
Well, we would have gotten started on this process a whole lot sooner. And EPA has the, you have to remember, EPA has a relationship with these facilities because we already have, the agency has some responsibilities there, so they know them. And it is a regulatory agency, so the field staff knows what to look for. They know how to get into these facilities, and they, when charged with responsibilities, they are used to doing it. And one of the things that we said, and we're very careful about trying to reassure the industry, was when our inspectors went in, if they could go in under the auspices of what we had proposed on the chemical site security, we weren't going to be using that as some kind of a shield to go in and look for everything. It was going to be focused on that. Obviously, if you stumbled across something else they were doing that was not right, you were going to bring that up. But we weren't trying to sneak people into facilities in over and over again in order to just do a gotcha. This was serious. This was about dealing with a potential threat to the health and safety of the communities. And we thought EPA was the natural agency to do it because that's what we do. We had inspectors, and they were out there in the field, and they dealt with these facilities on a regular basis on other issues, on the air issues, the water issues. So that's why we initially proposed that it should reside at EPA when the feeling was that they were going to give us the responsibility without the authority. That's when I said I'm happy to give it to Homeland Security or somebody, anybody, as long as somebody would get it done. But unfortunately, we weren't able to get anything moving at that point in time.
One other follow-up question, if I could. Why didn't the EPA put chemicals, reactive chemicals like ammonium nitrate, under its risk management program? Do you think you should have done that in hindsight, considering what happened at West?
Well, in looking at it, anything we could have done to enhance security would have put us in a better spot, obviously. There's no question about that. But you know, there are restrictions on how far you can go, and we were at that point in time facing a lot of pushback to getting anything done. And really what we were trying to do is say, stop. A lot of people hate EPA. It's a regulatory agency, and they don't like it, and they don't want them anywhere near it. And our feeling was, okay, if we're the problem, take us out of the mix. Just get somebody to deal with the problem.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Anthony Adragna with Bloomberg BNA. Anthony, please proceed with your question.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Thanks so much for having this call. One of the things that I oftentimes hear from people up on the Hill, particularly House Republicans, is they're concerned that mandating these new technologies and processes are going to impose an undue regulatory burden and are going to be overly expensive. How might you respond, I guess, Governor Whitman, to those types of charges?
Well, first of all, you've already seen that there are over 100 companies that have found better ways and safer ways to do it. You heard from the mayor how what's happening with water site facilities. And we got that done. That was done very quickly after 9/11. The water facility stepped right up to the plate. We were able to get legislation through to enhance their security, and they were able to find other chemicals. And one of the things we're talking about is when they're available, when they're affordable, when they make sense to move to them. We see this happening all the time. Totally outside of what we're talking about today in chemical site facilities. I'm on the board of a privately held company, SC Johnson. Makes all kinds of household products, deals with lots of chemicals. is constantly looking for new ways to reduce the hazardous chemicals that are used, and they're finding them. And they've gone way beyond anything that's regulated, that's required in regulations, and are working hard on it because it's the right thing to do. So you have companies out there that are doing this, and they are finding ways to supplant the more hazardous chemicals with processes that still allow them to be competitive in the marketplace, to return, if they're a publicly traded company, to return to their value to their shareholders. And it comes down, you're always going to have people who are going to push back and say this is too expensive, you can't do it. But when you start looking around and seeing that there are companies that are out there and finding that you can do it, then it's reasonable to say, okay, we want the rest of you to look at this. But again, understand, we're saying if it's affordable, if it's reasonable, if it's available, and they're just a lot more available than many are willing to admit.
Mayor Berkner, do you want to say something about how what the shift did with your wastewater plant? And
well, sure. I mean, I think I covered it. Having chlorine gas stored in the quantities that we did, it posed a tremendous threat. And it was extremely dangerous. Even the smallest leak required a level A response by our hazardous response teams and Bergen County Hazmat. And certainly posed a tremendous risk to the immediate workforce. The utilization of the sodium hypochlorite solution really just completely eliminated the responsibilities that we had under the TCPA, and we were able to, I feel much more secure just going to work every day, and certainly the people who live in the communities immediately surrounding our facility, pardon the pun, but they can breathe a little easier knowing that that they are not at risk. So, it was a pretty simple fix to a problem that it was always a cloud over the facility of something tragic that could happen. Just with the enhanced national security issues after 9/11, of course, put water and wastewater treatment facilities as well as other infrastructure facilities throughout the state. We realized what a target we were. So it makes life a lot easier for our residents and certainly for the workforce.
I don't want to push you too much if you don't know the answer to this, but the question was about the charges that it somehow will bankrupt plants or make it. You didn't have to shut down when you did the transition, and you were able to do it relatively smoothly and keep operations going without huge additional costs to the plant.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's an absurd allegation if that's being made. We were able to make that transition very, very seamlessly. We kept the chlorine gas on site during the process, but the installation of the tanks, the holding tanks, and safety containment structures that were installed for the liquid chlorine or the bleach, the sodium hypochlorite solution and the sodium bisulfite solutions. And also for the delivery areas, for the loading, offloading from the tanker trucks that would deliver the solutions. The whole process just became safer, and when you think about big picture, we're actually cheaper. The sodium hypochlorite is less expensive than the chlorine gas. The management and the requirements that we had as a facility, because we held chlorine gas and because we inventoried such a high quantity, our level of reporting, the costs of that, have been eliminated. So I can't get on board with anybody that's going to argue that it's going to bankrupt the facility or bankrupt. It's money that's been extremely well spent. And as someone, speaking as a mayor, obviously what we spend taxpayer dollars, and this is a public entity, so it is taxpayer dollars that's being spent. Now, you know, obviously, anything that's going to provide a safer environment for our constituents, to me, that's money well spent.
Anthony, did you have any follow-up that you wanted to?
Well, those were both very helpful. I guess another issue that's always raised is, bigger companies saying, well, we're already taking steps, but how do you catch sort of the outlier facilities and like the facility in West Texas? And I was wondering if you guys could speak to that as well.
Well, that's why it's so important. This is Christy Whitman again. That's why, to my mind, it's so important that you have federal action. The chemical industry, the Chemical Association, actually required its members after 9/11 to step up their level of scrutiny and hardening themselves as targets and to look at using different chemicals. And the initial legislation that was proposed back then when we were working on it in the Bush administration just reflected what they were requiring of their own members. And the point being, there are a whole lot of chemical facilities that are not members of the American Chemistry Council. And we needed to capture them all. So that's why, to my mind anyway, and let the other speakers speak to this, but that's why I believe so strongly that we need to have action at the federal level that is requiring everybody, because the big ones, most of them are acting very responsibly and are already taking these steps. It's the others, the smaller ones that are not, that pose these hazards to people.
Juan, do you want to weigh in on this question?
Yes. The question, it's real complicated again, because like you said, the industry always says that it's going to be too costly. But the fact of the matter is that we are putting people's lives at risk. And I'll give you another example of Houston, the Houston area. When an accident occurs here in Houston and then bodily injury or harm or death occur, and the news media goes out into the community and says, what do you think about this accident? And the community, in a sense, has become insensitive to it. They expect, chemical plants to explode. They expect death to occur. And so they accept the risk. And the risk that they accept is not, obviously it's not good, right? But what happened is that they have been inundated with the fact that this is the economy, this is good for the country, this is just the way we do our work, this is the way we function, and there's never the issue or discussion really about all these things can be preventable, and they can. And that's because the media and the industry has managed to convince us that this is just a way of life. I mean, there can be no changes, but we know there are changes. And we hope that this executive order will bring about those changes, especially, again, for the Houston area and other areas that have a lot of chemical plants. Let me tell you what, after the EPA decided to do the risk management plant in 1996, they mandated all the industry to come up with a risk management plan. And if you look at those studies, you'll see that there's an area that they call the near zone, which would be injury, death, or bodily harm, and then the end point, which would be no harm at all. There's a lot of communities here in the Houston Ship Channel that are in that near zone of that particular industry, which could cause, again, injury, death, or bodily harm. And that issue was just like, okay, that's good data. It's never going to happen. Accidents do happen, and that's what we got to try to do, prevent as many accidents as we possibly can and avoid risk of death to communities and workers.
And presumably the 400-plus chemical plants you talked about in your area, a number of those are the smaller plants that may be more risky and more dangerous. So those would be the ones that will require federal regulation to move in this direction that we'd like to see them move and look for safer alternatives.
Well, they would all require it. Again, I agree with you. There's safety issues that we are trying to address, and this would hopefully apply to all facilities, regardless of size.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Our next question comes from David Reynolds with Inside EPA. David, please proceed with your question.
Hi. Hi, thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask about the shutdown has been going on for a couple weeks, and I guess there's been a lot of optimism about having the executive order as an opportunity to, I guess, require the inherently safer technologies. But I was wondering if it's a concern that the first meeting was, I guess, going to be held the 1st of October, and maybe the deadline, it sounded like, for coming up with the plan for what they're going to do is the end of the month. All of August, all of September, has there been any discussions with EPA or opportunity for a public comment or anything to see whether this idea is seriously on the table? Can you address that at all? Thanks.
To see if the idea of inherently safer alternatives is on the table?
Yeah, you mentioned that the executive order seems to give the agencies the power to impose for technology.
We're very hopeful, members of the coalition were in fact lining up to participate in the public comment that was supposed to happen October 1. We're assuming that they'll reschedule that as quickly as possible, and that try to adhere as much as they can to this October 31st deadline, but it's likely to slip a little bit given what's happened over the last couple of weeks. But we're hopeful that the May 1st deadline in 2014, when they have to have their recommendations to the president, will stay in place. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
And of course, our poll confirms that a majority of the public, and it's a cross-party divide, the majority of the public wants the federal government to impose these new rules and try to encourage safer alternatives whenever possible.
All right. It looks like at this time there are no further questions.
Okay. I want to thank all of you for being on the call today, for joining the Chemical Security Coalition call, and particularly our speakers, Governor Whitman, thank you so much for taking the time and staying with us, General Manner, Mayor Berkner, and Mr. Pettis. Thank you all for participating in this. And please visit our website, preventchemicaldisasters.org.